Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion that we have every Tuesday on this show, give or take, and it is our book pick segment. We love when we get to talk about book picks. We love when we get to meet our independent, get to once again see our independent booksellers, our favorite people on earth, who come and tell us about the great books that have made their way to store shelves or will soon, and especially now in this gift-giving time. We really need your help, and I'm so glad you're all here. Let me introduce them to you this morning, and then we'll get started with these fabulous lists. Cheryl McKeon is here from the Bookhouse in Albany, New York, and Market Block Books in Troy, New York. Good morning, Cheryl. How are you?
Good morning. Wonderful. Happy to be here.
Wonderful to have you here. Lily Bartels joins us from the Open Door Bookstore and Gift Gallery in Schenectady. Good morning, Lily. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm well. Thanks for asking.
It's very nice to have you here. All right, Cheryl, we'll let you begin.
Okay. I will begin with what I just described as maybe the tiniest book on our shelves this season, tiniest new book, A Long Winter by Colm Toybean. The long winter of Toybean's novella spans the bleak, heartbreaking weeks after a young man's distressed mother walks away from their home in the Catalan Pyrenees. A blizzard strikes, and she's never seen again. A sparse but powerful story of loss and grief, the book is enhanced by Toybean's afterword telling how he came to write it. Now, I'm not a Toybean completist, so I was actually surprised as I got into the book and realized it has no reference to Ireland. These aren't Irish people. It's not set in Ireland. It's set in the Pyrenees. In his afterword, he describes how he wrote it 20 years ago, and it was included in his story collection, Mothers and Sons. And indeed, it is the theme that resonates. Miguel is the young man who searches for his mother, knowing she is lost. Toybean's talent at crafting a sparse story with emotional depth resonates in this tiny, unforgettable book.
I love this. I got it. And it's sort of being marketed as a winter book, which I guess it is, but although it doesn't really... You could read it anytime. Mm-hmm. And it has I usually find endings that are not conclusive to be somewhat dissatisfying, but this is just lovely.
Mm-hmm.
This
mm-hmm.
beautiful book.
Mm-hmm.
It's called A Long Winter by Colm Toybean. Hello, Lily.
I will begin with The American Revolution by Jeffrey C. Ward and Ken Burns. And, of course, this is the companion volume to the series that just aired on PBS. I brought the book in even though only the three of us can see it because it's such a, so absolutely gorgeous.
Because we needed an extra table in the studio.
It's just gorgeous inside and out. It's almost illustrations on almost every page, gorgeous illustrations, just an amazing array of prints and drawings and paintings and maps, and also art that was specifically commissioned for the series. And the text is completely engrossing. Jeffrey Ward has a way of telling a story that's gripping. It's in the moment. Much of the political and military history is presented through eyewitness accounts. And as in the series, it's an inclusive and more nuanced and more accurate account of the 8 years of the war because it includes the important roles played by women, played by Native tribes, played by Black people, both enslaved or fugitives from slavery and free Black people. And Ward tells the story from the bottom up, not from the top down. So, yes, we do hear from the founding fathers, but also we read the words of ordinary soldiers and also American loyalists, you know, who remained loyal to the crown. And the text also includes essays by the historians that popped up during the series on TV. So that's very interesting. And a lot of the narrative is threaded together with the words of Thomas Paine. I have to tell you, for me, this was an incredibly eye-opening story. I watched the series, and I was humbled by how little I knew about the American Revolution, like every aspect of the American Revolution. And yes, this was a revolution for American independence, but it was also a civil war between patriots and loyalists, and a war among global powers, Britain, of course, but also Spain and France. So there were international forces at play both abroad and in America. And it's all in this incredible book, which I would have to say would make an ideal gift for anyone who's even remotely interested in American history.
It's one of the few times where I had the companion volume while I was watching the series, which is fascinating to go back and forth and sort of be able to dig in and find out more as you're going through it. But it's really both are crowning achievements. I've interviewed Ken Burns, but Jeffrey Ward has been on the show and is just an amazing writer and amazing intellect and historian. So that's really top shelf. The American Revolution, an intimate history is the name of the book, an intimate history. All right, Cheryl.
And a fabulous gift book, Lily and I.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes, really. Good stuff.
My next book is Joyride by Susan Orlean. It's the direct opposite of the Calm Toybean book. It is not bleak. It is not sad. Joyride is her memoir from her almost 50-year career. It reflects her irrepressible joie de vivre. She sees every day as an opportunity for discovery and every moment having the potential for wonder. It's not just a summary of her varied and eclectic works. She honestly shares her life with us as well. Always wanting to be a writer, she grew up in Cleveland and negotiated with her dad after graduating college. He would give her a car if she would become a lawyer, and she said yes, and then she reneged, and she went off and became a writer. It's a smorgasbord, really, of her stories behind her New Yorker pieces, which I'm sure we've all read over the years, including where she gets her ideas. For example, her carefully researched story on how the sweaters in the New York City Benetton store were folded to perfection. And, of course, we get the backstories on her very popular and famous books, The Orchid Thief, including when she met Meryl Streep, who played her in the movie adaptation, The Library Book, and Rin Tin Tin. We learn about her research, and then often she includes the lead for a book or a story. She tells us the background, and then she tells us how she composed the story. And as you know, a hopeful writer, I always thought, oh my gosh, the perfect lead to be a writer of such talent and wit. Anyone who loves narrative nonfiction, reading about the behind the scenes of publishing, or is an aspiring writer will delight in going along on Susan Orlean's Joyride.
It is a magnificent book. I am such a fan of hers, and I think anyone who's also a fan of just good old-fashioned journalism, curiosity, and, well, The New Yorker, will really enjoy it. We ran a piece yesterday, an interview with Susan Orlean about the book. It was we had an interview. We did an event with her last month at Skidmore, and we taped a lot, and we could only fit 30 minutes into the book show, which will air this afternoon at 3 o'clock. And that's our interview about the book. But we had all this other stuff, a great conversation about her working with The New Yorker and what that meant to her. So that's available online. And then this afternoon, the interview with Susan Orlean will be online. But it is, it's as all of her stuff, it's just a great, great book. And like, we finished talking for 2 hours, and I turned to her and I said, and we didn't even get to your marriages. Good stuff. Joyride is the name of the book. Susan Orlean is the author. Lily.
I'm going to piggyback off of my first book with The American Revolution and the Fate of the World by Richard Bell. So in this book, Bell reinforces and expands on that reality that the American Revolution was a world war in everything but name. He describes, for instance, how it sent fleets of naval vessels across every ocean on Earth, and how ultimately the revolution resulted in the disruption of the political order from America to China and many points between. And also the American patriots relied almost completely on foreign aid to finance the war and also military aid. And then you had Spain and France attacking British-held lands around the world. So there were. It was really a global war. Bell sort of repositions the war as the center of this international web, and like Jeffrey C. Ward, he largely bases the narrative in the stories of individuals, including women, including minorities, including other disenfranchised people. So together, these two books, it's amazing how they shift everything I thought I knew about the founding of America.
Excellent. A good quinella, as we would say in the track world. The American Revolution and the Fate of the World by Richard Bell. Cheryl.
Well, probably you have already talked about this book on your program. I know that you know Julia.
I do know.
And I'm here to confess publicly that I'm late to the party. I had not read any Julia Spencer Fleming. And I thought, well, I'll start with her newest one because we did have an event at the store. She was so delightful. And I thought, what have I been doing if I haven't been reading Julia Spencer Fleming? So At Midnight Comes the Cry is, I think, the 10th in the Claire Ferguson, Russ Van Alstyne mystery series. I'm starting at the end. I'm planning to go back. But for any others who've fallen behind, I'll give a little background. Claire is a priest. Russ is a cop. They're married. And the stories are set in and near the Adirondacks. It's a seasonal story with a beautiful cover that looks very holiday-like with snow falling. The plot points hinge on Christmas and Hanukkah, and it's also very timely. The story starts just before Advent and continues through Christmas and Hanukkah. Claire, Russ, and their colleagues and friends are led into the orbit of a dangerous white supremacist militia. The situation is frighteningly credible, with ugly racism driving the violence and danger. Spencer Fleming softens this mystery with romance and parenting and friendship themes, and readers will enjoy her local references. Early in the book, a character shops at Bookhouse of Stuyvesant Plaza.
Ah.
The critical suspenseful scenes are set at the state capitol and the concourse. She does some lovely references to the architecture of our state capitol and the concourse. It's delightful. I'm sure I missed some background by coming in late to her series, but there was plenty to keep track of, and I'd say this is a very satisfying standalone.
It is. It's terrific. I just want to say she was at your store, and then she was at Battenkill Books on Sunday. On Saturday, there was a big event in our town, and so I'm reading the book the night before I'm going to see her. And this is how it starts off. The trouble started, as it so often does, behind a manure spreader. The Greenwich Annual Whited Tractor Parade was in full swing, and this particular spreader scrubbed until not a molecule of offending color and odor could cling to its metal, was brilliant with twining interlaced lights. The publicity for the parade had promised $1 million, and the owners of the heavy-duty machine were doing their part. The tractor pulling the trailer was equally festooned with a banner that proclaimed spreading Christmas cheer. And I thought, well, so then I realized that then the next day, Juliet was at the parade that night, which was very cool. And so it was a perfect thing for her to talk about in the event. But she is a Washington County sort, mm-hmm. and now in Maine. And she apologized. I don't know if she did this at your event, but she apologized about 20 times for it being 5 years since her last battle.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, thank God she's back. Mm-hmm. So it's called At Midnight Comes the Cry by Julia Spencer Fleming, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful addition. Lily.
I'm going to continue with Somewhere, a Boy and a Bear, A.A. Milne and the Creation of Winnie the Pooh by Giles Brandreth. And look at this cover. It's a wonderful picture of Christopher Robin and Winnie the Pooh. I love them both.
Okay. So I saw this book on your list, and I said, oh, cool. I've read this book. I have this book. I just got this book. It's not the book. There's also a book called The Making of Winnie the Pooh by James Carroll that's out from Rizzoli, mm-hmm. which is more of a picture book,
mm-hmm.
but does have on the history. And then I saw this and I said, oh my God, there's another book about A.A. Milne.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
Yes. Well, it's wonderful. And it is the 100th anniversary of the publication of A.A. Milne's Winnie the Pooh. And in this book, Giles Brandreth tells the story of how this beloved classic was written, and he also delves into the lives of its creator and his family. So Milne was born in London in 1882, and he became a successful novelist and playwright fairly early in his life, but it was his son, Christopher Robin Milne, who inspired the book that would become Milne's best-known work. So in 1921, on Christopher's first birthday, he received a teddy bear, which quickly became his constant companion. So Milne was inspired to fictionalize Christopher's relationship with the bear and also his other stuffed animals in these wonderful stories that were ultimately collected and published as Winnie the Pooh in 1926. Milne created, as
and later bastardized by the Disney Corporation.
Oh, well.
Go ahead.
No comment. But Milne created these very distinct and endearing animal characters. My favorite, by the way, is Eeyore.
Yeah.
So you have Piglet and Eeyore and Tigger and Owl and Kanga and Roo, and set the stories in the wonderful 100-acre wood. Well, the immense success of this book made Milne and his family wealthy and famous. But Christopher grew to resent the mean being used to achieve that wealth and fame. He was bullied in his private school, and he grew up to live a pretty private life as a bookstore owner and bookseller. And then in his later life, he mellowed toward the whole experience. And we know this because Giles Brandreth interviewed Christopher before Christopher's death in 1996. If you're a fan of Winnie the Pooh, and if you are not, why are you heartless?
Then what the hell is wrong with you?
This is a must read, and truly, I do adore Winnie the Pooh.
As do I. I mean, I grew up on this, it's fascinating because Christopher write two books himself, mm-hmm. about his time.
Yes,
which are one was very, very good. The other one was good, and then but if you ever get a chance and you're in England and you get to go to the Ashdown Forest, which is the 100-acre wood, mm-hmm. You can play Pooh Sticks. There's the Pooh Sticks Bridge there where they actually played Pooh Sticks, and the Heffalump Trap and all of the things that you know are firmly there and very much a part of the forest and marked and beautifully preserved by the British government. But it's really stunning. And now I believe the estate, I think, is an Airbnb. I think you can stay there, which is even cool. I think we would all have to rob banks to afford to stay there, but we could do it if we wanted to.
Well, who would suspect us if we walked in a door of a bank?
Yeah, that's true. Exactly. we're doing it for poo, for goodness sakes. Cheryl.
Well, I think this season lends itself to being a little sentimental. And then talking about teddy bears and Winnie the Pooh, we're definitely on the path. And every year I like to reflect on the holiday books, not only that we're selling in the store, which of course are multitudes of those, mm-hmm. But the ones that I shared with my kids. And I think, I kind of stand back and interview myself. What really resonates? They're the obvious ones, but there are some that are a little obscure as well. So I found one of those, and it is still available and for sale, Santa Calls by William Joyce. And this was first published in 1993. Santa Calls has become a Christmas classic. The picture book by William Joyce, who is the author of the Guardians series, Dinosaur Bob, mm-hmm. A Day with mm-hmm. Will Robinson. Mm-hmm. He's a little quirky. He's written a number of children's books, and his art is unique. Well, this seasonal story is not traditional, but it offers a tender moral folded into a crackerjack adventure. Set in Texas during the amazing Christmas of 1908, it stars Art Amesworth, boy crime fighter, his pal Spaulding Littlefeets, a Comanche, and his little sister Esther, who is often left out of the boys' adventures. In a caper that feels like a blending of The Wizard of Oz and The Polar Express, the trio journeys to the North Pole, where Art cleverly saves Santa Land from the villainous Dark Elves. Santa ferries them back home safely, presents them with gifts, but the real present, the one that expresses the meaning of Christmas, comes at the very end. And I am not going to spoil this.
No.
But if you have siblings in your family, this is the book to share with them.
A beautiful book. By a Cajun, no less.
That's right.
Yeah, right. Really. But the artwork is stunning. All right, 5-minute warning, but go ahead, Lily.
Okay, I have Family of Spies by Christine Kuhn. I saw her being interviewed not that long ago. I think it was on CBS Sunday Morning. And this story that she tells in this book still is so emotional for her that she was sort of overcome during the interview. But it is a fascinating and also devastating family story that almost defies belief, but every word of this is true. In a nutshell, Christine, who was born and raised in the U.S., discovers the horrifying truth about her family's impact on the events of World War II, particularly the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. And how she finds out about that is that in 1994, she got a call from a screenwriter about her German-American immigrants' family's roles as spies for the Axis powers in Oahu, Hawaii, ahead of World War II. And she was absolutely dumbfounded. She had no idea what this person was talking about. She called her father, and he said, oh, that must be another Kuhn family. 15 minutes later, he called back and said, it was us, and I'm going to tell you the whole story. So this was a bombshell revelation that set Christine on a long investigation into her family's secrets. And wow, she discovered that not only was her grandfather Otto an SS officer who turned into an undercover agent, but also that her grandfather's daughter Ruth, who was Christine's aunt, of course, had been a mistress of Joseph Goebbels.
Mm.
And that part of the reason the family was stationed in Hawaii is that Ruth, she was a child of a previous relationship of Otto's wife, was half Jewish, and Goebbels wanted to make sure that that fact was not exposed. So the family stayed in Oahu for 6 years, beginning in 1935. Otto rented a big house overlooking Pearl Harbor. He had very large parties to which he invited naval officers and other local elites, and more or less milked them for information. He was paid handsomely by the Japanese to gather information on the ships and ship movements and defenses ahead of the Japanese attack. This is a truly sensational story, and Kuhn does a really good job of weaving the facts of the story, which include the FBI's attempts to uncover the spy ring, and they did, with her own personal story, which goes from being in complete shock and disbelief to then having to reckon with her family's Nazi past. It is a doozy of a page turner.
Wow. It is amazing stuff. The name of the book is Family of
Spies of by Spies. Christine Kuhn.
Kuhn. Excellent. All right, Cheryl.
Yep. Ain't Nobody's Fool, The Life and Times of Dolly Parton by Martha Ackman is my next book. I heard Joan Greiner from Odyssey Bookshop talk about this book on
your show.
A couple of years, a couple of weeks ago. And I thought, I'm going to build on that and talk some more about it. It's just a thorough biography of the iconic Dolly Parton, and it's delightful. It's an exhaustive work. It's chock full of history, quotes from Dolly's family, friends, and associates, and colorful background on her impoverished Eastern Tennessee roots. Dolly once said, "I remember every little thing about every little thing," referring to her detailed song lyrics reflecting her roots. Ackman seems to have found every little thing to draw this engaging, absorbing story of Dolly, who turns 80 next month.
Mm.
She learned early that she was in the music business, and while she was a down-to-earth entertainer, delightful songstress, she was also savvy. And she has shared her millions through medical research, the creation of Dollywood that changed the economy of her hometown, and the creation and the cause that we all love, we booksellers, her Imagination Library.
Yes.
This has mailed more than 264 million books to children since 1995. Ain't Nobody's Fool publishes December 30th, just in time for Dolly's birthday.
How cool.
Love her.
Again, Ain't Nobody's Fool. All right. I think we're on a turn. You have a quick one?
Real quick. The Midnight Knock by John Frahm, a good way to describe it, locked room mystery meets nerve-wracking horror. In a nutshell, a group of strangers has to survive a deadly night in a remote Texas motel. It begins when a man named Hunter wanders into an auto body shop in Texas and demands from the owner that he give him a job. 6 weeks later, the two of them are headed for California, leaving a corpse in the shop, which they've also set on fire.
All right, we'll leave it at the corpse in the shop.
Just know it is a bit of a supernatural nightmare that has a very satisfying ending.
WAMC.org/roundtable to see all of the list. Cheryl, Lily, you're wonderful. Have a beautiful holiday. Thank you so much.
You as well.
We'll be back.
Thank you.